Very pleasant. Good evening. And we end the day just like we began the day. And we're singing hymns of praise, and we're opening the Bible and studying some things together, and hopefully learning some things at the same time, encouraging one another. I'm encouraged just by what happens before the services begin and after the services are concluded, as we just get a chance to visit with one another and talk. And that's as it should be. And I'm glad to be a part of that, not only today, but throughout the course of the days to come. Look forward to the week ahead. Brother DeGarmo and I have known each other for 200 years. In fact, we go back to the 20th century, right? I'm not good at math, but the 20th century and the 21st century, I think, is 200 years. So we've known each other a long time. Let's just leave it at that. And so it's good to be reconnected with them. And we got some Kentucky folks I keep running into all over the country. And so they're here tonight, and they could probably preach some of my lessons better than I could. So we're glad they're here, and it's good to reconnect with Monica again. We've been friends for a long time from Louisville days, and so it's good to see her again. And she has to go to Georgia, she said, on business starting tomorrow, so we'll miss having her the rest of the week. But we'll talk about you while you're gone, so you can listen up and see what we said. Look forward to the week ahead. Well, you had another year, and you had another birthday, didn't you? And you had another trip to the restaurant where your family likes to take you, where the servers all gather around your table, and they sing off key, and they pretend like they're actually enjoying that, which they're not. But for some of us, these birthdays that keep coming are beginning to pile up. And you thought the big 3-0 was tough. Well, wait till you hit the big 4-0 or 5-0 or 6-0. At some point, I think you just have to take the Buzz Lightyear approach that just simply says to infinity and beyond. It doesn't matter, you know. But here's the question. The question is not where you are on the age range spectrum of life. That's not the question. The question is, what are you doing at the age you are to capture significance with your life? It's not just counting your days. It's making your days count for something that is bigger than you are. I think most people want a life. They want a life that has meaning. They want a life that has purpose. They want a life that is more than just getting up and going through the daily, mundane minutiae of life. But how do I get that? Where do I get that? What do I do? Well, let me recommend a book. Let me give you a book recommendation that I recommend very highly. Here it is. As in, here it is. This book will give you a reason to live. This book will give your life clarity. It will give you a reason to get up every day. It will fuel your creativity. It will ignite your passion for life. And you will begin to live on purpose, because you will learn the secret to a happy life, the secret to a significant life, is to live outside of yourself. Which goes back to what we talked about this morning. It's more blessed to give than to receive. I will tell you, that sounds very strange in our 21st century narcissistic culture. I want you to take your Bible and go with me to Matthew 19. Matthew chapter 19. Beginning in verse 16. Where Jesus has a one-on-one encounter with a man that we just know as the rich young ruler. Matthew 19, beginning in verse 16. Someone came to him and said, "Teacher, what good thing shall I do that I may obtain eternal life?" Now stop right there. Let's give this young man credit where credit is due. He did come to the right source, did he not? And he did ask the right question, did he not? He said, "Teacher, what good thing shall I do that I may obtain eternal life?" And he said to him, "Why are you asking me about what is good? There's only one who is good. But if you wish to enter into life, keep the commandments." And then he said to him, "Which ones?" Now I find that interesting. Jesus said, "Well, obey God, keep the commandments." And he said, "Which ones?" Well, does he think it's a smorgasbord, kind of pick and choose kind of deal? And so Jesus said, "Well, okay, here's some. How about this? You shall not commit murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. Honor your father and mother. Love your neighbor as yourself." And the young man said to him, "All these things I have kept. What do I still lack?" Well, I doubt he'd kept all of those in the purest sense of the commandments themselves. But he said, "I've done all these things." Check, 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 check. And Jesus said unto him in verse 21, "If you wish to be complete, go and sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come follow me." Why did Jesus tell him to do that? Why did Jesus tell this young man, "Go sell all your stuff and give it away"? Well, for one thing, Jesus could read his heart just like he can read yours. And he knew that to that young man, all life was about self. And ladies and gentlemen, that's how a lot of people live. A lot of people have the mindset that says, "I want it all, and I want it now, and I want it all, and I want it now for me." Because life's all about me. And so life becomes about personal fame and personal fortune and how many friends, for example, I can have on social media and all that kind of stuff. That's what matters the most, because it's all about me. And I have to raise the question tonight. Is that what we're communicating to our kids? Is that what we are communicating to them? Because I will tell you, if we are, then we are failing miserably, because we're failing to teach them the meaning of life. We're talking this week on unshakable faith in uncertain times. And we talked about this morning, it all starts with what you think and how you think. It translates into how you live and the decisions that you make in regard to the direction your life is going to go. And then tonight, it also includes the lessons that we teach our children and our family in search of significance with your kids. It's all interconnected. You know, from the time our kids are very small, during their formative years, if we're not careful, we can enroll them very early. We can enroll them in the rat race of life. And so the K through 12 years becomes a rat race to get good grades. And by the way, I have talked to elementary school teachers who are stressed out, and elementary school kids who are stressed out because the focus, because of the emphasis that we put on them at such an early age in this area, because the secret to American success is obvious. Everybody knows it. You have to have great grades to get into a great school, to get a great job, to get a great, great life. And everybody knows that's how that works. And so we put pressure on our kids at an earlier and earlier and earlier age, and yet nobody ever stops to ask the great big elephant in the room question. And the elephant in the room question is, why? What's the real meaning of life? What's the purpose of all of this? I read where a California student got a perfect score on her SAT. And Stanford University in Palo Alto, California, rolled out the red carpet to her. Full ride. Obviously very intelligent, very smart. And some reporter was talking to her and asked her this very insightful question. He said, what do you think is the meaning of life. And this young lady who got a perfect score on her SAT turned to him and said, I have no idea. But that doesn't surprise me because most kids don't have any idea. And that doesn't surprise me because most of their parents don't have any idea. Ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of the K through 12 years, let's just call them the formative years of their lives, is not to just, from the very earliest of age, set them up so they can get an acceptance letter to a great university. The purpose of the formative years is to prepare their hearts for life. It's to help them come to understand what is the purpose of life. Well, the purpose of life is multivaried. One of the purposes of life is to help them, as their parents, steer them in a direction where they can find meaningful work, something they're going to be passionate about, something they're going to be excited about, something that recognizes their talent, their passion, and their opportunities. And as parents, we tend to guide them in those directions, and that's part of it. Part of it is finding relationships to nurture and helping them understand that people come before profits, that relationships are more important than anything else, and so we help them with those. Part of it is helping them find a cause to embrace that is bigger than self, a way to give back to the world who gives to them. That's part of it too. But most of all is helping them find and forge their faith in God so that they can come to have their own. When you get to the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, the wise man said, the conclusion is, when all has been heard, fear God and keep His commandments. Because this applies to every person. So those are the things that we need to be teaching our kids and helping them find. There is a verse in the book of Micah, and I know it's a minor prophet. You don't turn to minor prophets when the preacher calls one of those, because by the time you find it, he's long gone, okay? I'm not going to be long gone, so find Micah. I have to go through the list. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah. There he is. He's in there. I promise. Micah 6, verse 8. Micah 6, verse 8. If this verse is not highlighted in your Bible, it should be. Micah 6, verse 8. He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. Where are our kids going to learn that? Are they going to learn that from their peers? Are they going to learn that through their time spent in social media? Are they going to learn that through the American educational system? Is that where they're going to learn that? And I'll throw one more out there. Are they going to learn that sitting in Bible classes that are organized and structured in a local church less than 2 hours a week? Is that where they're going to learn that? The average American kid spends 7 hours of his or her day plugged in. I hope you know that. The average American teenager sends 3,147 text messages per month, over 100 a day. I tend to think that's low estimate. 97% of American teenagers have electronic devices in their bedrooms, which, by the way, pediatricians are now coming out and saying that is an absolute no-no. Because they're treating all of these behavioral issues in adolescence that they're finding out is really tied to sleep deprivation. While you, the parent, are worn out and exhausted and you're sound asleep and you think little Johnny and Susie is sound asleep, no, they're doing this or they're doing this. That's just a fact of what's going on in life. Our kids are becoming plugged in and tuned out at an alarming rate. And as a result, their peer world has replaced parent world as the primary influence in their life. Now, that's always been a problem, but not to the degree it is today. And so somehow, in some way, we have to create an alternative culture. We have to create a counterculture to that. And where are we going to do that? Well, it's going to have to be at your home. and mine. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, and we're going to spend a little time there this evening. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning in verse 7. Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning in verse 7. Moses talks to these parents about the importance of setting the right standard at home with your kids. Deuteronomy 6, verse 7. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. And you shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on the gates. He says every day is a learning opportunity in your home to teach your kids about life. And by the way, this must be important, because if you go over to Deuteronomy 11, verses 18, 19, and 20, and I'm not going there, but you can if you want, he says it again. He says exactly the same thing all over again. Chapter 11, verses 18 through 20. Check it out. So it must be important. You know, raising our kids to know about respect and virtue and character and integrity and morality and God is not some extra credit assignment God gives to us as parents. It is mandatory. In fact, in verse 1 of chapter 6, Deuteronomy 6, verse 1, this is the commandment, the statutes, the judgments, which the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you. Moses says, God has laid upon me a commandment, and he has commanded me to teach you to do this. To do what? To raise them to love God. To raise them to love and honor God first, rather than self first. He says that is essential. Raising them to understand that the world, amazingly, does not revolve around them is going to become paramount to their life success. Raising them to understand that it is more blessed to give than to receive will equip them for life that has a higher calling and a higher purpose than the way most people live. So back to that question, ask that young lady, what is the meaning of life? Great question. It's not how you look. It's not how many friends you have. It's not your grade point average. It's not how athletic you are. It's not how musically inclined you are. It's not an acceptance letter to a famous university. It's not any of those things. The real core meaning of life comes down to one thing. Are we connecting our kids to their Creator? That's what it's all about. That's the assignment. That's our responsibility. And you're going to get no help from culture. And you're not going to get any help, a lot of cases, you're not going to get a lot of help from other parents either. But that's what Moses is telling these parents. And he's saying to them, you have to set the standard. You have to set the example. In Deuteronomy 6, verse 4, verse 5, verse 6, he says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. You who? You parent. Mom, Dad, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your might. These words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart. He's turning to these parents and he says, you have to set the example. Because if you don't, you can talk all day long and your kids aren't going to listen. Because you see, kids can handle anything. They're very resilient. But there's one thing that no child can handle ever, and that is hypocrisy. And a kid can spot hypocrisy in his or her parents a mile away. And by the way, here's a thought. Those of you who are young parents, you ever think past today? Moses is challenging them to think past today. You see that in verse 2? So that you and your son and your grandson might fear the Lord your God. Now that's odd to me. It's odd to me that Moses is talking to these parents about their grandkids when a lot of them didn't have any grandkids. I think you know your Old Testament enough to know that all of the older people have died off in the wilderness. Remember? Now, some of them would have been old enough to have some grandkids, but I'll tell you, a lot of them didn't have grandkids. So Moses is talking to a lot of young parents with kids, And he's talking to these young parents with kids about their grandkids who aren't even born yet. Why would he do that? Because what he's telling these young parents is what you do today with your kids may become a determining factor as to whether or not your grandkids know God. Do you want your grandkids to know God? Now, that's odd to think about when you see these little kids running around after service. And I saw some this morning. These little kids all running around here, you know. And it's hard to think about that they one day are going to grow up and they're going to get older and bigger. And they're eventually going to get married and they're eventually going to have kids. And you're going to be a grandparent. Now, that's hard to kind of think about. But in the course of time, all things being equal, that's probably going to happen. And so Moses is saying the same thing to them. He said, you need to think about not only your generation, not only about your kids, but the next generation of lives who aren't even born as yet. So what he is telling them is, don't let culture, don't let especially the Canaanite culture that is all around, don't let that take control of your family. Don't let that happen. Shake off the shackles of complacency and engage and connect while you still have time to do that. And I'll throw this question out there for you. Are we teaching our kids about just self-esteem, or are we communicating the need for them to be humble? You know, as Micah said, walk humbly with your God. We live in a time in which parents do everything they can to boost their kids' self-esteem. And some kids need to boost their self-esteem. There needs to be a balance in all of that. But a lot of cases, a lot of times, we need to be teaching our kids to be humble. I thought about that when I read this the other day. A third grade class was asked to describe themselves in three words. So these little third graders, describe yourself, three words. This little boy writes on his paper, I am awesome. I am special. I am a genius. And he spelled it J-E-A-N-I-O-S. I don't think self-esteem was his problem. And I think a lot of kids are just like that. So how do we teach our kids to walk humbly with their God in an era of narcissism? How do we do that? How do we teach our kids to be respectful in a culture that's not very respectful? So I'm going to leave you with five things tonight. So find something to write on. You've got a paper. You've got a piece of paper somewhere. Because we're going to get down to three or four, and you're going to think, well, what was number two? What was one? All right, five things. I'm just going to go through these bullet points. Five things. Five, nothing complicated here at all. Just five really common sense things that you can do as a parent, grandparents too, that you can do to help make this happen. Doesn't do any good to just talk about, here's some information for you. Let's talk about, all right, let's talk motivation. Let's talk about how to take the information and turn it into real life stuff. So here it is, number one. One word. Chores. C-H-O-R-E-S. Chores. Require your children to participate in age-appropriate chores. We're mean parents. Admit that. We make our kids, even our new kids that we just recently adopted, we tell them they got to make their bed every morning. I know, that's horrible. Make their bed every morning. Now, if they don't and forget or get busy or whatever, it's not the end of the world. It's not that big a deal. But that's one thing they can do. And we teach our kids, all of our kids were growing up, we had four biological children, and we would teach them to help out around the house. They could set the table. As they grow older, they could feed the pets, they can mow the lawn, they can vacuum their room, they can take out the trash. There's all kinds of duties in the family home that you can begin to engage your kids and get their cooperation in helping out. When our kids turn 13, every time one of our children turned 13, it was a rite of passage. And we had a celebration because they were now a teenager. And when they turned 13, we presented them with the keys to the washing machine. Because we just thought that as, you know, when they become 13, they already know everything anyway. And that since they are so tech savvy and all that kind of thing, that at least they could figure out how to work a washing machine. It's amazing to me that kids can do anything with technology, but suddenly a washing machine is over their heads. It's not that complicated. And so they began to have to do their own laundry when they were 13. It's amazing when I got to college how many friends of mine that I had didn't even know how to do their own laundry. What are you doing with all of these things? Well, you're teaching your kids some life lessons 101. And the purpose of all of that is to help them understand the world doesn't just revolve around you. You're not here just to be served and waited on all of the time. As you grow up, you can begin to serve and you can begin to contribute. And so as a member of the family, even when they're young, there's some age-appropriate things they can begin to do that will help them learn that. Chores. Number two, disconnect them from social media. Disconnect them from social media. Now, I don't always mean entirely, because social media can have some positive things, but not if it's taken to excess. And it can become an unhealthy addiction. And that word is showing up more and more and more these days. I know a family that has five kids, and they're older. And they have a no tech Tuesday. They have a no tech Tuesday. And every Tuesday, they just have a family rule that, none of them can be involved in anything that day that has something that plugs in. And so they reconnect family on Tuesday. And if it's warm, they cook out and they play basketball. They play hide and seek. They do stuff outside as a family. If it's cold, they do other things and go places, or they sit and play cards and play games or whatever. But they have no tech Tuesday. I know another family that makes sure that when their older kids go to bed, that all the electronic devices goes into a basket in mom and dad's room. Those things are put away. I have a friend that runs a camp. And when the kids all come to camp, some 300 of them, they all have to turn their cell phones in. And he says it is amazing to watch some of these kids literally go through withdrawals. And it's amazing to watch them have to learn how to FaceTime in real FaceTime, because some of them don't do that very well. By the way, you need to be your kids. You need to have access to their social media stuff. And you need to know what's going on with social media, because there's a lot going on that sometimes we parents don't really know. Our oldest son, who's been in law enforcement for the last 12 years and who still is young enough to connect with kids, came and did a lesson for us last Sunday afternoon. We just had a special lesson on this topic. And it was all about parenting in a dangerous digital world, what parents need to know. And so he talked to our parents. He talked to our kids. We had a couple hundred people come in the middle of the afternoon on Sunday afternoon. And he talked to us about all of those things. And it was enlightening. And I think there were a lot of parent-kid conversations that went on after that lesson. And I think there were some phone apps that disappeared off of some kids' phones. It's amazing what's going on if you don't know what's going on. And yet parents always say, well, my son would never do that. My daughter would never do that. Yes, they would. Because peer pressure is an incredible force. And sometimes we get older and we get busy and we don't want to be bothered or we forget. Why do you think the Bible says over and over and again, do not be deceived? Why do you think it says that again and again and again? Because it's so easy to be deceived. And to think that, oh, that'll never happen in my home. Well, yeah, it could. And it does all the time. So be careful. Don't let social media run their lives. Don't let that happen. Third, this is really complicated. Eat together as a family. Eat together as a family. The most important piece of furniture we have in our home is an oak kitchen table around which we set two adults and four children. And there were six of us, and then one left, and there were five of us, and one left, and there were four of us, and one left, and there were three of us, and one left, there were two of us. And we thought, well, this is boring. And so we went out and adopted three more, and so now we're back up to five. Same table. And around that table is where our lives as a family happen. Around that table is where we talk about at the end of each day what went on today. And I'm always asking crazy questions. I'll ask the kids, I said, well, okay, scale of 1 to 10, what was your day today? 1 being ultra terrible and 10 being ultra good. Where was your day? We'll kind of talk about that, or there'll be other questions I'll throw out at them. And we're sitting talking, and sometimes the meal's long gone, we're still sitting there laughing and talking and just enjoying being together as a family. I teach a teenage class, and I had a visitor one day, this is a few weeks ago, and I was talking about how important it is to connect with your family and eat together as a family and that kind of thing. And one little boy raised his hand in the back. He was a visitor. I didn't know who he was. And he said, my family never eats together. He said, I don't ever remember eating with my family. I didn't know what to say. But I knew enough to know that I don't think he's alone in that. There's probably a lot of families who don't spend very much time eating together. Eat together as a family. Reconnect there. Number four, don't overschedule their lives. As a culture, we are so into all of these organized activities that as parents, we end up doing to them what we detest in ourselves, and that is overloaded schedules. Help your kids learn some discipline. They can't do everything. They can't have everything. You got to be selective. But whatever you select, don't let it become the master of your life and of your family. And don't let it steal the most important thing, and that's your spiritual priorities. Because when you overcommit, something has to give. Someone has to give. And I think we all know who ends up on the short end of that stick. What message are we sending our children when we do that? Number five, get outside and do something together. There was a dad who had a troubled teen, his son, and his son's attitude stunk, and he was going in the wrong direction. And this dad tried to figure out what to do, and he tried several things. Nothing worked. And so it was in the winter. And so he pulled his kid out of school. And they got in the car. He just took off work. They got in the car, and they drove for 2-3 hours to the mountains. And he took his kid to one of these ski areas where they had a tubing run. And all the way there, the boy sat with his head against the window, looking out with his headphones on, listened to his music, and paid no attention to his dad, sulking, didn't want to go, didn't want to be with his dad, and all that kind of deal. And they got there, and they got their tubes and got up to the top of the run, and they went down. And the father's thinking, maybe this was a waste of his time and my time, because I don't know if this is going to work. And they got to the bottom of the run, and he said, my teenage son grabbed his inner tube and turned around and began to run and then yelled over his shoulder, you're not going to beat me this time, Dad. And took off and headed back up to the top of the hill. And he said, from that moment on, he and I had the best day we have ever had in our lives. And we did those runs until we were just exhausted. And he said, the whole way home was totally different. We take our kids sometimes to a place in North Georgia called Hike Inn, H-I-K-E-I-N-N. It's 5 miles to get there. You have to walk. It's not this. It's this. It's not a hard hike, so little kids even can go on it. But you go there, and they serve you dinner, and they serve you breakfast, and there's nothing to do there. Your cell phones don't work there. And so they got all these board games and all this stuff. It's a wonderful place to take your family. And there's places around like that. That's what I'm talking about. I hate golf. But when my youngest son decided he loved golf and he played high school golf for 3 years, I decided if I'm going to spend time with him, then I need to play golf because that's what he loved. So I went to play it against sports, and I bought a great set of golf clubs for $99.95, which I still have. and we go play golf. And we've gone all over the place playing golf, and we have a great time. And he keeps score. He's very conscientious about keeping his score, and he's pretty good. And he'll keep his score, and at the end of every hole, he'll ask me how, you know, what was my score on that hole, and I always say the same thing, 5. It doesn't matter. I just always tell him 5. So that way, I always shoot 90, because I don't ever keep score. I don't care, because I'm not there to play golf. I'm there to play with him and be with him. And we'll be going down the fairway in the golf cart, and I'll say, look at there, my ball sitting right next to yours. I always use a Wilson golf ball because it's got my name on it and because I can remember what it is. And my Wilson golf ball will be sitting right next to his Nike golf ball. And I'll say, look at there, there's my ball right next to your ball. And he'll say, Dad, you've hit it twice to get it there. But I don't care. We're just doing things together, father, son. That's what it's all about. In 1995, I bought a 71 Chevy pickup. Paid $1,600 for it. Drove it home. Julie cried because it was in primer gray, a real beautiful color. And yet I tried to be logical about it. I said, the body's good. The engine's strong. We can really do something with this truck. And she said, you just wasted $1,600. But as time went on, it wasn't a waste at all. We saved up a little money. We painted it cherry red. We saved up a little money. We got new tires. We saved up a little money. We got straight pipes on that thing. And when he was 16 years old, I threw him the keys. And all through high school, he drove Big Red. Got 8 miles a gallon. You could hear him all over town. We lived in a little town. And you could hear him all over town. So I always knew where he was. And I always said the reason you went in law enforcement is because you spent so much time with those guys. Because they were interested in your truck too. That's what it's all about. Our daughter loved horses, and we'd take her to rodeos and all that kind of thing. So we lived out. We had 5 acres, 4 fenced with a barn. And so I bought a Tennessee walking horse. Now, let me explain this. We lived in Tennessee. The horse was old, and all she wanted to do was walk. So that makes her a Tennessee walking horse. You get that. And so, but it gave her something to do, something to ride, and we would go to a rodeo. She loved barrel racing. She loved to watch these girls get out there and barrel race. And then she would come home and she'd try to barrel race. She'd get our 2 Rubbermaid garbage cans and put them out in the field. And then she would try to barrel race that old horse. And that horse would look at me. And if her eyes said anything, it said, please stop taking her to rodeos. But she would get out there and ride that horse all afternoon. Here's what I'm saying. Do whatever it takes. Do whatever it takes to connect with your kids. And it's not always the stuff you like to do. Maybe you need to find out what they like to do and reconnect with them on their level and on their terms. Because life is pretty short. You got one shot. Don't blow it. In this crazy, godless culture, our kids need their parents more than ever. And don't be afraid to parent. There are too many parents who, they want to be their son's best buddy or they want to be their daughter's best girlfriend. Our kids don't need best buddies and girlfriends and their parents. They're gonna work all that out on their own with their peers. What they need most of all is a parent. What they need most of all is somebody who's not afraid to be the adult in the room. And to say no sometimes and mean it. I think that's what Moses is trying to get these parents to understand, how important a time this is. May God help us as moms and dads, wherever we are in the age range spectrum of life. Maybe you're a parent, maybe you're a grandparent. All of us have influence to some degree. Let's use it in the right way. May God bless us as we do so. We sing the song of invitation tonight. You're not a Christian. Why don't you obey the gospel? Why don't you become a follower and a disciple of Jesus Christ tonight? You can do that by putting him on in baptism. Or if you owe a duty to God in some other area and you need our prayers and encouragement, that's what we'll do. We'll give you our prayers and encouragement. Won't you come while we stand and sing together?